illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us Stuart Lessing is from Great Britain. He is a member of the European Parliament. And of course, he is there representing the people in Great Britain who are really very, very concerned about the fact that the move towards the European Parliament, move towards a European government, which will encompass all of the countries of Europe, will be the end of British sovereignty, will be the end of the freedom of the British people. Mr. Moat, thank you so very much for being with us today.
Pleasure to join you.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? I know you're a writer, and now, of course, you're even a politician. In fact, you've likened yourself to the turkey who, of course, is voting for Christmas, because you're there in the European Parliament in an organization which you disagree with. So tell us a little bit about why you disagree with the European movement. After all, it's supposedly designed to end war and help everybody prosper and raise living standards. But what in the end is going to be the end result of this this European government, if it ever becomes a reality?
Well, basically, the problem that I and many hundreds of thousands of others right across the continent of Europe have with the idea of a single, centralized super state, because that's basically what is being proposed, is the lack of identity and the lack of decision making at the national level. We have survived as a nation for many hundreds of years. We created the very idea of parliamentary democracy some 800 years ago, and of course your own system of government in the United States is based very directly on what we enjoyed up until the time of the American independence. And what we're seeing now is all of that being eroded, and an attempt made to destroy that sovereignty, that sense of identity amongst nations, which is very important to most of us, and replace it with something essentially bureaucratic, centralized, and unaccountable. And we want none of it.
And of course, there is a movement within Great Britain opposing this, but it would appear that the leaders of both of your major political parties, or all of your major political parties, are intent upon bringing this about, almost irrespective of how the people feel.
Well, that's precisely right. It is appalling that we do not have, in our own existing parliamentary system, any effective opposition to what is being proposed. All three of the parties represented in our House of Commons are in favor of the European Union, which is why true leadership of this movement has moved down to people like myself at the grassroots originally, who were not politicians. I was a businessman. I wrote non-fiction books about sport in my spare time. And I suddenly found myself looking around and saying, in effect, well, if nobody else is going to do anything about this, I suppose I'd better.
Well, I'm going to have you sort of hold that thought for a moment. Well, I'm an orthopedic surgeon, and I'm doing talk radio, which is not my avocation, but, you know, I'm doing this because somebody's got to do it. And, of course, the future of your country and of my country hangs in the balance today, and most people aren't even aware there's a problem. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Our guest today is Mr. Ashley Moat, who is a member of the European Parliament, and he came on today because he's going to be in Strasbourg next week at this time, when Parliament will be sitting, and he is a representative, from one of the representatives from Great Britain, to this European Parliament, which is to become the government of Europe. Now, of course, there are many people who say, well, isn't this a great thing? After all, we're going to have a government there, just like they have in the United States, and then there'll be no more warring between the individual countries any more than there is warring between the various states here in the United States. There's competition, but no warring. But of course, the thing that I think that Mr. Moat has brought out is that this is the end of British sovereignty, and of course what you're going to have is simply a bureaucratic control over the lives of the people, very similar to what we have here in America as freedom disappears progressively. So I think it is the feeling of many people in Great Britain that once all power has been taken to Strasbourg or to Brussels or wherever the Parliament is sitting, why, of course, freedom as they've known it and parliamentary democracy as they've known it in Great Britain will simply become a remembrance of things past. Would that be a fair statement, Mr. Moat?
Sadly, you are absolutely right. It all boils down to a very simple question. Who governs Britain? That is what this debate, this issue, is all about.
Well, why is it that so many people, the leaders of both your conservative and liberal and the, whatever the other party is there, why are they all in favor of doing away with British national sovereignty? You would think that they would be dedicated to maintenance of Great Britain rather than betrayal, because this is really a betrayal of your traditions and your history.
It is. And I simply cannot give you a coherent answer to that question. It is a mystery to me as it is to you. I have asked representatives of all of those parties, and I have got no satisfactory answer from them. I mean, the truth of the matter is that we were the inventors or the creators of genuine, accountable parliamentary democracy some 800 years ago. We created a form of government which enabled the people to have effectively control over their own affairs by delegating it to elected representatives for a limited amount of time. And at the end of the 5 years, in your case it's four, that power is returned to the people.
Hold that thought for just a moment as we bring on our other stations. Well, Dr. Stan back here, Mr. Moat, of course, Mr. Ashley Moat, member of the European Parliament, is with us, and we're talking about this idea of eliminating this concept of parliamentary democracy, which has been such an important part of the history of Great Britain, going back for 800 years. And once the power to rule and to govern moves from London, from the Parliament itself, to Brussels or to Strasbourg or wherever the European Parliament is meeting, then of course your Parliament, your elected Parliament, will be more or less figureheads, won't they?
Well, they've already become much less relevant and much less able to make decisions on our behalf and in our best interests over the last 32 years since we first joined. Increasingly, all the decision-making power has been transferred to Brussels. Now, some of us think that is treasonous. Some of us take the view that our Parliament, elected to look after our best interests, had absolutely no right, no authority, and were never given a mandate to pass that power to a foreign form of government. And let me make it clear right from the start, we are not opposed to and have no quarrel with the people of Europe. The only thing I am quarrelling with them about is their system of government called the European Union, because it is essentially bureaucratic. It is based on the power being managed and controlled by unelected bureaucrats who are not accountable directly to the people, who cannot be sacked. And the Parliament to which I belong is an elaborate, expensive, complicated democratic fig leaf. We are there to give the illusion of democratic accountability But we do not have the power to introduce legislation, and we do not have the power to repeal it. All we have is the opportunity to talk.
Well, that's sort of like really like our Congress, because our Congress and our Senate really are figureheads for most things. You know, the leaders tell them how they're going to vote, and in most instances they go right along with it. Many times they don't even read the legislation, and they get up and they give their talks, and they sound so so erudite, but of course it's the bureaucracy that implements the laws that really they take a law, and then of course they write up the whole system of laws based upon that, which many times has nothing to do with what our elected representatives really intended. But the average individual out here in America has no idea that's going on, and I suspect the average citizen in Great Britain has no idea what really lays in store for them, do they?
Well, I tried to clarify the differences between what we have been used to and enjoyed for 800 odd years and what we are now being faced with. And if you will allow me, I'd just like to go through these differences as I see them, because they do distill the whole problem that we are now facing here in the United Kingdom. In this country, as in America, the state draws its powers and answers to the people. But in the European Union, the state exists in its own right, and the people answer to it. In the UK, our rights and freedoms are our birthright. But in the European Union, they are granted and removed by the state. Here in Great Britain, no man is above the law, including our Prime Minister. But in the European Union, the bureaucrats who claim the power to rule us have given themselves immunity from prosecution.
Isn't that interesting?
Here, we are regularly able to throw our government out and elect a different government that has the power to change everything their predecessors had ever done. But in the European Union, we're dealing with rascals in power who have never even been elected. And it gets worse. In the UK, as in the United States, everything is permitted until our elected parliament decides otherwise. But in the European Union, everything is implicitly forbidden unless the state decides to allow it.
Sounds like almost a communist country.
Well, there are one or two communists. A man that may be known to some of your listeners, Vladimir Bukovsky, who was escaped from the Soviet Union in the 1970s.
Yes, I think we've
exchanged for a Soviet spy that we had caught. And Vladimir has described the European Union as the new Soviet Union, and I think, frankly, he's right.
But do the English people have any idea, really, what lies in store for them as this thing progresses?
Well, that is why some of us have become highly vocal and made ourselves a thorough nuisance to try and bring these issues to their attention.
Well, are you getting to them? In other words, are the people in England listening to internet and programs like this from the United States? Are they? Do you have people over there in Great Britain who have access to internet or to radio or to television so they can reach the people?
Oh, yes. And we had an election to the European Parliament last June, and I was one of a dozen or so elected into the European Parliament, to which we so strongly object, as you said earlier in the programme, like turkeys voting for Christmas. I have found myself in the midst of an organisation that I wish to see abolished. Well, to be fair, I'm not really saying we should abolish it. What I am saying is that we, the British, should never have joined it in the first place, and we should leave it to the European, continental Europeans, if that's what they want to do, but we should have no part of it.
Well, do you think the average European really wants this, or do you think that they're being simply forced into it by their leaders? And of course, I think it was in one of the countries, maybe Denmark, where people kept voting and voting against it, and then they kept having more and more elections so they could finally get something through there.
That's quite right. I mean, again, if I can borrow an idea from Vladimir Bukovsky, who I mentioned just now, he's pointed out some time ago, quite rightly, I think, that whereas in the Soviet Union, the state used threats and created intolerable conditions and even the capacity to murder its opponents as a means of retaining control. Whereas in the European Union, they tend to buy their support and they tend to make it extremely difficult for people to say no because they do so well financially from it. And I'm talking essentially about the political leadership, and I'm also talking about significant numbers of people in some countries, farmers in particular, who have done extremely well out of our being members, or their countries being members. And as you may know, last year 10 new countries, mainly from Eastern Europe, joined the European Union, and I know from personal experience, because I've been there, that the farmers in Estonia now think the European Union is a fantastic organization because they're earning something like 3 times what they did a year ago. And where is all that money coming from but the British taxpayer?
Well, I think, of course, that temporarily things will be very good, but wait until all the tariff barriers are down, and, of course, then, of course, it can get goods flooded in from other areas. And, of course, this is with the World Trade Organization, things of that sort. Even here in the United States, where our farmers are doing very, very well now. Once, of course, we withdraw the subsidies from the farmers, because the subsidies have been used to buy their votes. But once we withdraw the subsidies and open our borders to foreign competition, it's very hard for an American farmer who's got to pay salaries of $10 an hour to compete with China, where they pay 25 cents an hour to grow products, or even south of the border. So all of these things are down the line. I think right now they're probably buying the people's support by lining their pockets with gold. But down the line, of course, they're going to lose everything.
I think that's absolutely right. Coming back to this business of contrast between the haves and the have-nots, the way money is distributed within the European Union, and a vast amount of it is never properly accounted for, as you probably know, is to divide, or what has happened is that the European Union has attempted to divide the entire European continent and the British Isles into 111 regions, I think it is, or maybe, no, it's slightly more now. And any region that has an average per capita income below the average for the entire area has money pumped in to pay for infrastructure and so forth. And all those regions which are higher than the average get nothing. And would you believe it, surprise, surprise, there is now no region in the United Kingdom that qualifies. Not even Wales or the north of Scotland or the far southwest of England, which are probably the least developed and least wealthy parts of the UK. So we are paying £1.4 million an hour. What's that? That's nearly well over $2 million dollars an hour into the coffers in Brussels. And all we get back are ever-increasing regulations and no benefits.
Well, now, are the English people beginning to wake up to what's really happening? Do they understand the implications of what's happening?
Oh, yes. We now have a solid core of opposition in this country, and I'm delighted to be able to tell you, for example, I don't know what your listenership profile is, but there may be a significant proportion of young people. Let's hope there are. But I can tell you that in an opinion poll that was completed in September, end of September last, 62% of young people between the ages of 18 and 24 expressed strong opposition to the very idea of the new European Union constitution that's being proposed.
Well, let's hope that that just continues to grow. We just hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. And, of course, when we return, we'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 right here at Radio Liberty.
Have you ever wondered what the Vietnamese War was really all about? Why America, the most powerful nation in the world, spent 10 years fighting in Southeast Asia against a nation the size of the state of Mississippi, and America lost that war? Do you really believe that happened by accident? There's so much to the story of Vietnam that the American people have never really known. And in our four-tape set, Vietnam, The Untold Story, you're going to get the information that you need to understand the tragedy of that event. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for Vietnam, The Untold Story, the story of what really happened in Vietnam that has been suppressed from the American people for the last 20 years.
This is health journalist Bill Sardi. In the 1970s, there was a group of Italian immigrants in the small town of Rosetto, Pennsylvania, who drew worldwide attention for their unusual cardiovascular health, despite their pasta diets. I recently uncovered the fact that their unusual health was attributed to the precious red wine which they imported from Italy. Today we know this as the French paradox, the fact that the French exhibit greater cardiovascular health, despite their fatty diet, because of the red wine they drink. Wouldn't it be great to enjoy the health benefits of red wine without the calories, alcohol, and sulfite preservatives? Well, now you can with Longevinex, the world's first stabilized red wine molecules preserved in an airtight capsule just like in a sealed bottle of red wine, equivalent to 5 glasses of the best red wine. Call 866-405-4000 to order Longevinex for healthy aging without the calories and alcohol. 866-405-4000.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Thierry. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done: get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Mr. Ashley Moat, who's a member of the European Parliament. How many of the people who are elected to the European Parliament would share your feelings about the disastrous danger, or the very real danger of this organization as it expands its power?
Well, as I think I mentioned earlier, there's a dozen or so of us from the UK, but there is generally a hard core anti-vote in on the occasions when we have the opportunity to vote on anything fundamental in the Parliament, which is not very often. There's a hardcore vote of about 80 out of a total membership of 732. So you're talking about 10% or thereabouts.
And now these are from other countries all across Europe then that feel very strongly as you do.
Yes, but for different reasons. And not all of them would agree with me that they want to see the European Union abolished or they want to see their country leave. Some would, but not all. There are quite a hardcore group as well who are very concerned about the corruption and fraud and the mismanagement of the funds that are distributed and which essentially are not ours but come from the taxpayers of the entire 25 nations of Europe. The amount of money that goes missing and is never properly accounted for is quite horrific. We're talking about over 90%. And I'm deeply involved in that issue as well. I sit on the committee which is supposed to be responsible for investigating these things. But again, we are there just to talk about these things and we have no powers or very little power to do anything about it. But I think my main concern right now, and for everybody involved in this issue, actively involved, is the proposed European Union Constitution. It has already been put to the vote by the Council of Ministers. It's been signed by all the heads of state. And over the next few months, each country has to ratify it, and many countries, including the UK, are holding a referendum to make that decision binding and to leave the decision to the people of that country. And this constitution is a very long, complicated, rather grandiose, and in some places contradictory document. It shares nothing with the elegance of the Magna Carta or the Bill of Rights or the Declaration of Independence at all.
In other words, they put in a lot of words just so nobody can really figure out what it's really saying.
Well, I've read all four versions several times over, and I've also made a videotape about it to try and clarify the situation for people in the UK. And it seemed to me that one of the most fundamental flaws it has is that it is proscriptive rather than enabling. It's a rather complicated means of trying to seize power and retain it in the center amongst the unelected bureaucrats. Now, in my simple way of thinking, a constitution should be enabling. And it should create a framework for lawmaking. But what this does is to ignore requirements of that kind. It actually creates law itself. It creates no checks and balances to control future lawmakers. And it puts an elite group of people above the law, which is to be imposed on everybody else.
But that is really, I think that is the ultimate plan, ruled really by an elite. And the people say, well, but we're a nation of laws, and you're going to have to go along with these laws, even though they will be, of course, no way, of course, to counter this as you can today by throwing your elected representatives out. Once this is in place, you will have lost all control, won't you, as a British subject or a British citizen?
Well, that's precisely right. We have to stop it. We absolutely have to stop it, and the fact is that there is a majority, perhaps a soft majority as things stand right now this minute in the UK, against the very idea. But of course, once this campaign gets underway, there will be huge amounts of money spent by the yes side, which will all come from the taxpayers who don't want the thing in the first place, because it will be provided by the European Union. Trying to persuade the British people to say yes. And it will be done by threatening them with all kinds of dire consequences if we vote no.
Well, let's hope that the British people will stick by their guns and will not be swept along. The tragedy is, of course, when you've got a good television campaign, what they really ought to do is turn off all the television sets during an election, because they are used to confuse people and to get them to vote for things that really, in my opinion, are detrimental to the survival of society. We'll be right back here in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
A A very important book is called AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic. Actually, it's a book I wrote back in 1991 that tells you the story of the politics of the AIDS epidemic and the fact that doctors have been blocked at every turn from doing what was really necessary to stop the spread in the United States and throughout the world. AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, it gives you my story of my effort working with an organized medicine, the fact that the doctors of the state of California consistently voted and supported an effective public health policy, and at every turn their efforts were frustrated by those working within organized medicine, both at the state and national level, and the tragedy is that people are dying in America today unnecessarily. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for AIDS, The Unnecessary Epidemic, because you need to understand the background of this epidemic to understand what is really happening medically in America today.
Leading-edge dentists know the profound effect dental materials and procedures have on the health of the entire body. If you've been searching for a holistic trained dentist who can safely treat you, look no further. Dr. David Biles has been a leader in the Santa Cruz dental community for nearly 20 years. He built a solid reputation providing exceptionally high-quality cosmetic and restorative dental care long before learning the very real hazards of common dental practices. Now, as a faculty member of the Institute of Natural Dentistry, Dr. Biles has begun lecturing nationally to other dentists on alternative and complementary dental care. On request, Dr. Biles will safely remove toxic dental materials from your mouth while substituting them with safe, non-allergenic restorations. Call Dr. Biles today and take the next step to improve your health. With sedation and nitrous oxide available, Dr. Biles can help even the most anxious patients. Call 423-0121 and schedule a visit now. That's 423-0121.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and let me just mention that if you really want to understand what is transpiring in the world today as far as Iraq is concerned, you need to get our video, Iraq, The Untold Story, and you need to get the syllabus that goes with it, and if you get that from Radio Liberty, of course, you'll get it at a reduced rate, and you'll actually see the document. You'll see the document that was written in 1908 or 1909 that was talking about the coming World War, because World War I was planned long ahead of time. We talk about the autobiography of Bertrand Russell, where he talks about how in 1905 he was attending meetings with a little secret group called the Coefficients, and they were already planning World War I at that time. And he even left the group because he disagreed with the idea of the war. And, of course, you'll find all the documentation in Iraq, The Untold Story, the video, the syllabus. Call us at 1-800-544-8927. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this afternoon is Ashley Mote. And Mr. Mote is, of course, a member of the European Parliament. And he's been willing to commit himself. He's basically a writer and a businessman. But he's given up his regular profession to try to do something to save Great Britain. Now, the average American could never believe America losing its national sovereignty. Why, our leaders would never do that. After all, we have a Christian administration. Well, I would like to suggest that both our Christian administration and, of course, Mr. Bush's opponent, John Kerry, were both dedicated to globalism. They didn't even bring up this subject during the campaign because the last thing they wanted is the American people to understand that this is the real purpose behind the people who control both of our political parties. Well, right now we've got Herman calling in from Carmel. Did you have a question for Mr. Mote, Herman?
Yes. How would you answer someone who says it is far better for the Europeans to be part of a European Union, to pay higher taxes, than to go through what Europe went through for the last 200 years, which is a constant succession of wars, which devastates the continent, kills millions, untold millions of people?
All right, fine. That's a very legitimate question. Did you get the question, Mr. Mote?
I think so, yes. It's quite difficult to hear.
Well, let me just repeat it. Basically, Herman is saying, how would you answer the person who said, look, wouldn't it be better, as far as Great Britain was concerned, if you could just do away with war completely and have the opportunity to have perpetual peace. After all, you don't want another series of wars like we had during the last 100 years, the devastation. Wouldn't it be better simply to give up your national sovereignty, and at that time you would no longer have wars? How would you answer that argument?
Well, first of all, I don't think you have to have a bureaucratic system of centralized government to achieve peace. Peace on the continent of Europe over the last 50 or so years must stand to the credit of NATO. And the European Union is a relatively new entrant into the field of claiming the peaceful nature of the continent of Europe. This idea has only arisen in the last few years as a pseudo justification for its very existence. But NATO preceded it, and NATO has kept the peace in Europe very well, and it is not a pseudo government and has never attempted to be a pseudo government. It is an organization that has enabled sovereign nations to work peaceably together to retain stability on a continent which has in the past, yes, of course, been torn apart by wars. But I would add one other thing. The Europeans who claim that the European Union is the principal cause of this level of peace that we've enjoyed in the last half century, forget one dramatic incident, and that is what happened in Croatia in the early 1990s. And you may recall that Germany was the first nation to recognize officially the existence of Croatia as a separate independent nation, having broken away from what was then the Yugoslav Federation. And it forced the European Union to follow suit. And immediately that happened, we ended up with another Balkans war, the like of which we haven't seen for nearly 100 years. Now, the result is directly because of actions taken in Europe amongst European nations. So I don't buy the idea at all that the European Union has contributed to peace in Europe. I think, on the contrary, it can be demonstrated that they have, on one occasion at least, been a direct cause of additional conflict.
All right, Herman, you hang on there. We are having a Janet calling from England, long distance, so we'll get her on and then we'll get back to you. Hi, Janet. Did you have a question or comment for our guest today?
Oh, hi. Yes, I have. Okay, we've got people back home here in England asking... Okay, so we've got UKIP members of Parliament in the European Parliament, whatever. But what can they do there to make a difference? Is there anything that they're able to do to make waves there and to generally cause a stir? You know, is there anything they've done so far that is going to put a spanner in the works, if you like?
All right. Did you get the question, Mr.
I did. Yes, I heard that one. Well, first of all, can I say to the lady... If she's not already aware, I have a website on which I try to record what I have personally been trying to do and what I have been able to do. And if I may, the website address is www.ashleymote, all one word, that's ashleymote, .co.uk. And I update that as often as I can when there is something to report.
Now, is that .com, C-O-M, .uk, or just C-O?
No, .co.
C-O-U-K.
.uk.
All right, fine.
And also people can buy my books and my DVDs on that website as well. And that's the end of the commercial. let me come back to the question, and if I may just take a minute or two to give you two specific examples of what I, as a mere backbencher, have done. And one of them, I think, is really quite important, especially to people who served in the armed forces. About 2 months ago, the European Union published a a leaflet, well, in fact, it was a small book, aimed at school children, and it was allegedly a history of the 25 member states of the European Union. And the two pages on the United Kingdom made no reference whatever to the two world wars of the last century, when hundreds of thousands of Brits gave their lives fighting to defend democracy and freedom on the continent of Europe itself, not just on behalf of Britain, but on behalf of the continentals as well. And there was no reference whatever to this in what was allegedly a history of the last 100 years or so. And I wrote to the Parliament, to the President of the Parliament, and I complained on behalf of those the fallen, and I said that this omission was an insult to their memory, which I believe it was. And I did not expect to get a response, I must admit. I felt better for writing the letter. I felt it was necessary to write it, but I frankly did not expect a response. To my astonishment, just before Christmas, I got a reply saying that, yes, they understood my concern, and in the circumstances, they proposed to withdraw the entire print run. They would be pulped, and they were putting in place arrangements to ensure that such a serious omission as this did not occur again. Now, that's just one backbencher on one incident. Now, that is not the same as bringing our membership of the European Union to an end, which is a much, much tougher task. But nevertheless, it does show that you can have some impact.
And, of course, I think because you are a member of Parliament, you can speak with a certain amount more authority when you're back in Great Britain, and people will tend to listen to you and hopefully heed your warning. Anything else you wanted to say, Janet?
I just think it's a shame that none of our press and media over here caught on to that story at all whatsoever.
Well, you're quite right. I put out a press release. My office put out a press release. It was sent to the Press Association. It was sent to Reuters. It was sent to every local paper in the area that I represent. It was sent to the BBC. It was sent to ITV. It was sent to the Sunday newspapers. And not a word appeared in any media that I know of.
That's what's known as freedom of the press. Anything else, Janet?
But
don't get discouraged. Janet, what you can do is try to get your people in Great Britain to listen to the Internet. They will listen to our programs. They will learn a great deal about what this is really all about, because there truly is a diabolical purpose behind what's going on.
Yes, I really enjoy. I'm really pleased you found your program. It's fantastic. Yes.
Do you listen to our program regularly?
Yes, I do.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so very much for calling.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for the question.
God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, fine. Well, let's let Janet go, and let's see if we've got Herman still there. Hi, Herman. Did you have anything else you wanted to ask?
Yes. Is our guest familiar with, is it Alan Franklin, the coming European superstate, with his work? And then the final question is, if Britain decides to get out, would there be war from the Europeans if she withdraws from the Union?
Well, first of all, are you acquainted with Mr. Alan Franklin, who has written at least here?
Alan is a friend of mine, most of his book is based on my book.
All right, fine.
And that's not an insult, by the way. No, we're very good friends, and he regularly uses some of my material, and I'm very happy that he does.
Well, actually, I've heard him speak, and he's shown pictures of that building there in Strasbourg. Is that the one that looks like the Temple of Babel, the incomplete building?
Oh, yes, that's right.
Could you explain the significance of that for our listeners? Everything so much is symbolism. And, of course, many of the people who listen to our program, are coming from a Christian perspective, and they understand the story of the Temple of Babel. But, of course, I think it is so really significant that they have built this new building where the Parliament meets, and symbolic of the incomplete Temple of Babylon. Would you like to just explore that idea, Tom?
Well, I don't think I can add anything to what you've just said, quite honestly. That is precisely right. It is one of the most depressing and ridiculous buildings that I've ever seen. It is extremely inefficient from the point of view of just being in it and trying to do what you have to do. The only merit I can find is that you do keep reasonably fit because you're forever walking miles.
Well, in some ways, I envy you. I really should be doing more walking myself. Well, Herman, did you have another question for our guest?
Final comment. Are you concerned that the new European Constitution gives no mention to over 2,000 years of Christianity, the history of Christianity in Europe?
Well, I understand that a great many people feel very strongly on that issue, and I do sympathize, but it's not an issue that concerns me on a personal level very, very deeply. I think politics and the government of a country should be a matter that embraces all the citizens, whatever their religions. What I am concerned about is the cultural conflicts rather than the religious conflicts. And one of the deepest problems we have with the European Union and its attempt to regularize and organize everything is that it cuts away the diversity, which is actually the great strength of all the European nations when looked at as a group. And my view is that the Europeans can never be allowed to become our masters. They are our neighbors, and they should be our friends. And the very idea that our traditions and our way of doing things and our way of life and our heritage and our culture should somehow be buried under some kind of anonymous and neutralizing norm simply because it suits a bunch of bureaucrats. To me, that's a complete anathema. I just am not prepared to see that happen, and I will do everything in my power to stop it happening.
Well, I think that I'm just so glad that you and some of the other people are there and are speaking out and are at least having some sort of a voice there in Great Britain. Does you have anything else, Herman?
Well, does our guest, do you feel that there is a chance that this European Union will someday be at odds with the United States and create a conflict?
Now, that's a very interesting question. First of all, I think that the collapse of the European Union is inevitable. That's the best news I can give you. I don't know when, and I don't know how, and I may not live to see it, but I really do believe the seeds of its own destruction are set within it and have been from the outset. But I have detected, and it's not very difficult to detect, it's quite blatant at times, there is a passionate anti-American feeling which emerges regularly within the European Union bureaucracy, and it is perfectly clear that for many of them European Union is a competing vehicle, and it is intended to become the equal and probably in their grandiose scheme of things the superior power block over time. And I think if you're looking at you started your first question was about keeping the peace. If you take a longer view and you take a more global view, I think there is every risk that if they were to succeed, that what we would end up with is two, possibly three power blocks, because China of course is going to become another one, who in due time could even find themselves fighting a global war amongst the three of them.
I really think that is a very, very real possibility, and I share your concern. Hey, thank you so very much for calling, Herman.
Thank you.
Well, bye-bye. Bye-bye. And I really think that that there are very real possibilities. Certainly the people in who run the European bureaucracy want to have the euro compete with the American dollar for the position of reserve currency of the world. And of course, some of the other things that we see, really the real problems as far as the economy of Europe is concerned, certainly Germany, which has been very, very generous as far as its social welfare programs and pensions and healthcare, is suddenly beginning to cut back on everything. Are you hearing any rumbles about that? Because they're really trying to cut back on their costs so they can be more competitive in this world economy that seems to be coming?
Well, there is a great difference between the Anglo-Saxon attitude to commerce and the European. we in the UK are much like you in that we thrive on free enterprise. The European model of the economic model is essentially what they call a social market economy. In other words, they regard the benefits to the workers, the working conditions of the workers, and all this stuff related to people, which I don't wish to dismiss totally, but they see that as much more important than actually generating wealth itself. Whereas the Anglo-Saxon view is that you generate the wealth and then you worry about the distribution of it afterwards.
And of course, if you have a wealthy society, why, everybody benefits.
Well, absolutely.
Well, we're out of time. Mr. Mode, it's been a fascinating time. Thank you so very much. And I do hope that sometime we can get you back on. Again, I'll talk to Mr. Theobald, who arranged the interview, and I would look forward to having you back again sometime.
I shall look forward to it, and thank you for inviting me this time.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Another of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen or what they may be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America. Our values, our future are under attack today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I just want to mention that we do carry the Big Berkey products here at Radio Liberty. We carry the Big Berkey, we carry the Berkey Light, we have the sport bottles, we have, of course, the filters and the PF4 and the PF2 filters. If you are in an area where they have fluoridated water, or you want to get the bad taste out of your water, or make sure there are no herbicides or pesticides, or there certainly are no bacteria, cryptosporidium, or other things in your water, where the Big Berkey has certainly been the standard of excellence going back for 150 years. The Berkey Light, in many ways, even works better. The only disadvantage is you have to, every couple of years, you have to change the black Berkey filters. But, of course, you can get post filters for both the Berkey Light and the Big Berkey that will take out fluoride. And if you're in an area where you have fluoridated water, you do not want your children drinking that. It will lower their IQ. There are all sorts of studies coming out of China that show that. Show how it actually given to, for instance, fluoridated water given to pregnant rats, why the children of the pregnant rats are hyperactive. If you give the fluoridated water to male rats after birth, why they become couch potatoes. And so really what we're doing is doing harm to the brain. You can actually find the brain lesions. You say, well, why would we be fluoridating water if that were the case? Well, Europe doesn't fluoridate their water. They want their people bright. There really are people who hate America. And this is a great experiment. It's been going on for 50 years. That's one reason, in my opinion, why our SAT scores are so low. They've done damage to the brains of our children. You need to get our latest newsletter. We'll be glad to send you one free of charge if you call us at 1-800-544-8927. You need to get our four tape sets on water fluoridation. You need to get Chris Bryson's book, The Fluoride Deception, and call us at 1-800-544-8927. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, I hope you enjoyed our interview with Mr. Mote. Certainly, he's a very nice gentleman. He said he really didn't understand, though, why these things are going on. Well, you have to understand that there was a secret society created in England back in 1891, and if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you really need to get it because we have all the documentation on it. And we will tell you where you can read from people who were in the secret society or knew people in the secret society how this whole thing came about. And, of course, the Secret Society had a front group called the Round Table. It developed another front group. For the front group, was called in England the Royal Institute of International Affairs, and similar names throughout the world, Canadian Institute, South African Institute, New Zealand Institute, Australian Institute of International Affairs, and in the United States, the Council on Foreign Relations. So once you begin to see how it all fits together, it all goes back to Cecil Rhodes' Secret Society. But of course, what people have missed is the occult background of that Secret Society. Now, the master plan is that they will unite Europe, they will unite Asia under China, they will unite the Western Hemisphere under the United States. That's the master plan. Why do we have wars? Well, they fight wars to create peace. That was the idea. The First World War, this terrible, bloody, horrible conflict was fought to end all wars. And that is the same idea as of today. Why are we fighting in Iraq? Why to bring peace there? We want to bring democracy. We want to bring the New World Order. And I'm reading a book called now The Pentagon's Map. And of course, it goes into the whole idea of why we're in Iraq today is to bring the New World Order and to bring people to power who will go along with our vision of a New World Order and, of course, a New World Religion. When you understand that, everything makes sense. Otherwise, nothing really makes sense. And you must understand behind all of this, those powerful spiritual forces, what you need to do is get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. And of course, if you can get that by itself, or you can get the video or the audio tape, you get all three of them together as the Brotherhood of Darkness special for $29.95. Then to put things into better perspective, you need to get Megiddo 1, which goes into the plan for World War I and World War II, and yes, World War III. They're put together by Chris Pinto, very professional, 2 hours and 15 minutes, gripping commentary. And then, of course, now we have Megiddo 2, and of course, so you can get them on video. DVDs are not available yet for Megiddo 2, but they will be hopefully in a week or so. But we get these and watch them, and you'll. Megiddo 2, of course, takes you into this whole New Age movement. The purpose of the occult secret societies has always been to create a world government. When you understand that, everything makes sense. Otherwise, nothing makes sense. So, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, A Brotherhood of Darkness, and of course, then you need to get the video. They sold their souls for rock and roll, the 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version. I'll tell you, we've seen the 4-hour version. My wife started looking at the 10-hour version last night, or perhaps it was the night before. She was so enthralled with it, we had a hard time getting away from it. It is really gripping, and it's a great, the 10-hour version. We've, of course, sold a number of these, and we've never had a person who complained about it. There's 4 videos, 10 hours. They sold their souls for rock and roll. If you have children or grandchildren, you have to get this and have them, of course, watch this. You need to get our 4-tape set on the Crisis in Christian, Musical Madness. We have a 4-tape set because there really is a demonic element to this music. We have, of course, a book, The Crisis in Christian Music. But you must understand that all of this has to do with Satanism. There is another dimension out there, and these people have tapped into that. They've got power, they've got money, they've got sex, they've got drugs, and they sold their souls to the devil. And it's not only simply in music, it's in every aspect of our life today. And that is what these secret societies are really all about. And until you understand that, you can't understand anything going on. Brotherhood of Darkness, they sold their souls for rock and roll. Megiddo Part 1, Megiddo Part 2. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And again, our number 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow at the same time, may the Lord be with you.